over the span of 1 hour, two different groups playing independently of each other in the same room. There were kids who invented opposed roles and who basically invented what gets called story gaming. Right? So we had one group who was rolling for everything. And we had one group who was rolling for vast passages of time, and I want to go through the magical forest and recruit, an army. Okay, let's roll your charisma for that. And this represented months and months and months of time. So they were working on a story level. The other group was working on a purely character level. I had modeled none of this. I had given them none of this in the model session that I ran. I didn't include any violence whatsoever. I did investigation and I did information collection is what I showed. Lots of different ways to do that using the tools on the sheet. They created initiative. They created, one group had static damage, the other group had random damage. This just came out of nowhere. So I just thought it was fascinating how they could do it and not care. Like, nobody asked me, is this right?
Jay's gonna bring me back. Give me a plus one to attack. Whoa, oh, oh, I want to come back to the dice. Whoa, oh, 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 I think I need some good advice.
I need a role-playing rescue. Oh, yeah. I need a role-playing rescue. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hello, rescuers. My name is Che Webster, and this is Roleplay Rescue, the podcast about rediscovering our passion for tabletop role-playing games. Today, I have another of my conversations with a friend within the role-playing games community. This episode, we dived into talking about sparking creativity with younger students of varying ages, a comparison between my guests' creative writing courses that utilize role-playing games and my own school-based RPG club for teens. Big thanks up front to my guest, Runeslinger, also known as Anthony, for reaching out and asking if we could have this conversation. I found it to be very rich, and I hope that you will enjoy it too. This is Season 12, Episode 16, Sparking Creativity with Runeslinger. My guest today is Runeslinger, also known as Anthony Boyd, the creator of Casting Shadows, a blog offering commentary about role-playing games and techniques for both players and adjudicators. In addition to the blog, Runeslinger also has a YouTube channel and podcast and extensions, really, of sort of his Casting Shadows brand, I suppose, for want of a better word. Hailing from South Korea, Runeslinger joins me today to talk about our similar endeavors in encouraging young people to play tabletop role-playing games. Thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I guess it's always good to start with backstory. So if I may, how'd you get into role-playing or tabletop role-playing games?
I think it's a pretty normal story, more or less, and that I was friends with a fellow who had older brothers. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of abnormal. I'm from Atlantic Canada, and I really don't know how anybody in a small town where I was got a hold of Dungeons and Dragons at all, but his older brothers had.
Right.
And he got their hand-me-downs. So when they shift to advanced, he got their basic stuff and so on. So when he was going to get the shiny new Mensur box set in 1983, I got his Moldvay, and then a little later got his Holmes.
Right.
Stuff as mine forever.
Real treasure.
Yeah. And he was pretty interesting, I guess, emulating his brothers. They were war gamers first and role players second. And he was kind of the reverse. He was a role player first and a war gamer second. And he ran my first session for me, which was awesome. And then he said, okay, when we play again, you're the DM.
Okay.
And I said, okay, and I read the rules and I ran a session. We had an interesting time. I learned a lot. And pretty much at that point, I was hooked.
Right. Have you been a sort of forever DM since?
No, not really. More now than then. in those days, a lot of us were suffering from the satanic panic.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't allowed to play. Some of us were allowed to play. So it was all very secret, hush, hush. And you couldn't ever remember who was allowed to play and who wasn't allowed to play.
Right.
So I literally played walking to and from my house to school.
Awesome.
And in the stairwells at school, we didn't have a game club. Some of the towns around where I lived, I found out later, had game clubs, but not ours. There's nothing. And so we could play. There were some safe haven basements and stuff like that. But
it's amazing, isn't it? Thinking back to the areas where we grew up, where literally because of that, it was a sort of truly underground thing. very, very much a minority thing as well. It's fascinating, really, think how mainstream, at least the big brand of Dungeons & Dragons has become, you know.
It's true. It's completely different. And so because of that environment, whoever was ready to run something ran something. We all had our own campaign worlds. None of us could buy anything. There were no game stores anywhere nearby. Even after we got driver's licenses, it was a considerable drive to get anywhere that did have a game store, if you even knew that it was there.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we're just making up our own stuff and using the core rules. And so I was kind of a minimalist by default, but also by nature. Later that would be beaten out of me by, you know, commercialism, and I would buy. But in those days I was pure and untainted. Yeah, we were all game masters and we were all players.
No, absolutely. And was there a period ever where you sort of dropped away from it, or did you manage to maintain that through the years?
I maintained it. It's the one thing, the one constant thing. I moved a lot. I've never really stayed, other than the last few years living here in South Korea. Every 4 years I was moving somewhere else, new friends. It's the one thing that stayed true.
That's cool. And so tell us a little bit about, like, what led you to Casting Shadows, you know, to creating your blog and the other things that you do. What was genesis of that?
I used to have a friend who was the guy that I talked games with.
Mm.
He was the game master in the city that I lived in that everybody wanted to get into his game, me included. And he had some interesting table rules, like you could stay in the game until or if your character died, and then you were out for a while.
Okay.
You might come in as an NPC or something like that. But, you know, in order to satisfy the huge demand, this was one of the things he had. So after I met him and started gaming with him, we talked about how to run games and how games feel, how games could feel, and what was different when we ran Shadowrun, when we ran any BRP game, and why was it different? And, you know, being able to express those things and be challenged but be listened to was pretty interesting. It wasn't just my voice and everyone just nodding their heads or scratching their heads because I'm not making any sense. It was, well, have you thought about this? And sometimes I had, or sometimes I hadn't, or I had, but not in the way that he expressed it. And it was just one of those exciting moments. When he passed away, I kind of had one of those tears and rain Blade Runner moments, realizing that all of those conversations now only exist in my memory.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of at a loss of how to handle that. And that's where the blog came from, is that at least my half of the conversation, or one half of the conversation, could be out there. And if people chose to engage with it or engage with the culture of play that I grew up with, or were interested in these old games that I still play or whatever, that it could be found and not just gone. Cause he really, there's nothing left of any of the sessions that he ran or except.
Mm. No, it's, so I guess in a way it's an homage to that, that fellow and those games and that experience that you had.
Yes.
And so what are you playing? What kind of stuff are you playing at the moment? I gather it's a range of things from what I've looked around on your material.
I have some tried and true games that are always in motion. There's usually something related to BRP, whether it's Mithras or whether it's Call of Cthulhu or what have you. in the works all the time, and Ubiquity, originally from Exile Games for Hollow Earth Expedition, but usually I play AAA games from your part of the world, Leagues of Adventure, Leagues of Gothic Horror, Leagues of Kazoo, that kind of stuff. And those are the main standbys. We just finished playing Alien, we've just started playing Blade Runner, and I'm just a player in Blade Runner, so that's that's exciting.
That's nice.
And what else? Oh, I just am wrapping up running a campaign, an online text-based campaign of Corporia, which is by Brabblemark Press.
Okay. So, and I know that one of the things that you're, I picked up on the theme, one of the themes in all of your stuff is sort of essentially stepping away from what is considered the mainstream and actually presenting to people some of those really great alternatives that are out there as well, and talking about them and talking them up. Am I getting that right?
I think so. I don't know how intentional that was in the beginning, but there are an awful lot of games out there, and some of them are truly incredible, and just for lack of that moment of luck or that spark or that good tagline in an advertisement, people didn't know about them. Like I don't seek out outre or weird or esoteric games on purpose.
Yeah.
I seek out things that are just different from what I've done before, or just different enough that I want to see if it really affects the play experience. Like, yeah. When I was investigating Powered by the Apocalypse, I got a variety of them, not nearly all of them, but ones that focused on the character abilities as related as skills, and one that was related based on their emotions. Same mechanisms of play, but we're thinking about one as the skillfulness of the character, and the other is thinking about how invested they are in that particular moment. And that kind of stuff. So that's what I like to explore, not particularly how famous or infamous or unheard it is, but the effect is the same.
Okay. So in terms of, like, you know, just before we start talking about the things that we're both involved in, the big question I always like to ask is, you know, what is it about tabletop role-playing games particularly that you do enjoy, and why are you such a champion for them?
I certainly couldn't express it at the beginning, like that magic moment in the first and second games, right? First experience as a player and first experience as a game master, where I got hooked. I knew I'd been hooked, but why? You know, when they'd been pitched to me, my buddy said that this was your opportunity to be the character. And I think that really had an impact on me. We didn't have the kind of terminology like, you can be in a fantasy story, or, you know, the way that role-playing has changed in my experience over the 40 years I've been playing. Okay, 40 years.
I've been playing. It's humbling, isn't it?
It's a little surprising, yeah. I'm still 20, right? Yeah. But now we hear more often that you're going to participate in a story, you're going to be a main character in a story, you're going to be a protagonist in a story. And this is tends to rub me the wrong way. I think because I see it as it's your opportunity to be the character. And what that means is you're presented with information, a situation, a scene, a setting, and you're going to act in some way, you're going to react in some way, you're going to interact in some way. One of those three things, you're going to be making decisions as a result of the information that you have received and that you are, you know, producing. And that I find incredibly satisfying in the same kind of way that living your life is satisfying. You know, you're presented with a challenge, presented with a, you know, I'm not a competitive person. I don't like overcoming obstacles. I don't like beating the other guy. I like collaborating. And so that plays into it as well. Like, there's no end state. There's no win state. It's not my faction versus your faction. It's we have a good time today. Yeah.
I recently revisited, like, one of the games that was very influential on me was the second edition of RuneQuest, and basic role-playing. There's a little booklet at the start of that. Which came with the box set in there. And right at the start of that booklet, it talks about how role-playing games
I am paraphrasing outrageously, but how role-playing games are, in some sense, about like that, that like life. Do you know what I mean? Like, you are going to take on the role of a character in a fantastic world, and you're going to, you know, essentially live the life of that character. You're going to make decisions from that character role. And like you, I think that's the way I've always viewed it. I think, and maybe in the last 4 or 5 years, I've been able to express that, but I'm, you know, similar to you. And for me, like, the story bit is the bit where we're talking about afters. You know, the story comes when I'm telling a mate about it, you know, and actually then I tell the story of what we did, right? Actually, the story
past
is
tense.
It's past tense. It's emergent from actually the experience. So it's quite interesting to hear you talk about it in sort of similar terms. It's really nice. Okay, so thanks for that. Because I think it just gives everyone an opportunity to sort of get a sense of you. So we actually got online today to talk a little bit about the interaction between, you know, you want to talk to me about the school club I'm running, role playing club, and you're also doing some post secondary education stuff with adults or whatever. So it would be really useful if, very briefly, you could outline, you know, what it is that you're involved in. And then obviously we can have a conversation about the connections that we think we might have.
Right. So it's what, when I was reading your blog and listening to the podcast, there were references to the school club and the gifts that you'd given them, the different game books, and how they had reacted to them, the way that they're just playing. Mm-hmm. And this kind of brought my quote end quote creative writing class to mind, because I had what I think of is probably a similar reaction. So the class itself was originally for adult students, language students of quite a high level, mm-hmm. who had other goals than just learning language.
Yeah.
So they were working in advertising, but they've grown up believing that they're not creative.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been told it enough that it has become truth. I am not creative. And so how can I do creative writing? So, you know, I want to learn from someone outside of my culture, kind of thing, how to be creative, how to think critically, how to do these certain tasks. So language courses revolve around some of these things, like mm-hmm. business courses or writing courses. Or, mm-hmm. what have you. So this was one package that I prepared for students to be able to write creatively. But any writing class I've ever taught runs into this huge wall of, well, I don't know what to say. Doesn't matter if they're writing in their native language or in a second or third language. They don't have a story, or they don't have a message, or they don't, right? So frustration builds really quickly, because they're already feeling like they don't know anything. They're a novice or whatever. They didn't really understand what today's lesson was about. And now they're expected to perform that lesson in solo work to be graded, and they've got nothing to say. Okay. Right. So this is a terrible feedback loop. So how do I get rid of that? Well, role-playing games. We will play. The session will create the content. Their writing ability, whatever it happens to be, will record the content. And then we can work on them to make that content read in the way that they want or need it to read.
Okay.
Whether they're a game developer or, you know, someone who wants to write fiction or write movie scripts or whatever. Okay. So that was the genesis of it. And then as time went on, I opened it up, made it possible for younger and younger students to try it.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed the same effects in all the age groups. And it's the effects that I thought, you know, where we might run into some interesting synergies or whatnot.
Okay, cool. So very much it was a case of, like, you'd run a session and then they would, like, go and write up the what happened, essentially. And then you would help them then with the development of that writing and sort of shaping that writing.
That's what the students thought. But yeah, I was more devious than that, I guess. It was a 2-month program. And on the first day, I would show them the dice. Has anyone ever seen dice like this before? And usually they had, but in math classes for math.
Yep.
And I, well, we're not going to use them for that. We're just going to use them for their actual function of probability. It's like, well, why? And so then I handed out pre-generated characters and I explained the character sheet, and I would make a stripped down version, not always, but often, of BRP.
Right.
That they could understand just from the character sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They could see a skill and they could see that it had a percentage chance, and they, I would explain, they would understand. Right. Yeah. So it was pretty simple. Pre-generated characters. And I said, these are your characters and we're in this situation and this is happening. What do you do?
Mm.
And they're used to role playing in language classes all the time. It's, so it was, like I said, it was devious of me. And we played for about 30 minutes and I left it at a cliffhanger. And then we took a break and we came back, and some people had graph paper and note paper on their desks, and some people had blank character sheets on their desks. And I told them it was determined totally randomly, but of course I was actually choosing the people who were the most nervous and the most closed off.
Yeah.
They were the game masters for the first session.
Right.
And I took them to one part of the classroom, took the people with the character sheets to the other part of the classroom, and character people would make characters following the rules, and I'd check in on them, but mostly I was over with the game masters. Draw a map. Mm-hmm. They can do that. No problem. Okay, well, what's on the map? They can do that. No problem. Around the point where the map's being finished, I'm indicating to them, wow, you're really creative.
Mm-hmm.
And we go from there. So what's going to happen when people walk into this area? Now, we didn't always do fantasy. The first year, we did kind of a Harry Potter-ish kind of world. And the second time with kids, we did it with superheroes. And the third time we did it with this kind of Unreal Tournament kind of thing. And mm-hmm. you're all being brought together like Highlander and for the Gathering. And,
yeah.
And at the end of it, they would, I would edit them all up and we would print them, and everybody got, a copy of their short stories together
stuff.
To kind of cement the notion that, you did this, right? Yeah. You were whatever age, you were 11 years old, you're 15 years old, you're 21 years old, and you wrote, you finished, and you published a story.
Yep. And for obviously the listeners, you can't see, Anthony was just flashing me copies of like various books that have been printed up from those. So it's kind of impressive, it has to be said.
That's kind of cool.
Okay.
So I only ran the session for 30 minutes on the first day. Mm-hmm. All other sessions for the rest of the 2 months were run by truly random from this point on game masters until everybody had done it once.
Yeah.
And then we opened it up for volunteers who wanted to go again. And we just kept going. They kept generating more content
mm-hmm.
and they would use it. They would not copy it from that point on. They would use it as inspiration.
Yeah.
Things that people said or traps or environments or whatever.
Yeah.
And create whatever it is they wanted to create.
Sounds a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So
one of the better courses.
No, absolutely. Okay. So from my end, I mean, all I am is a school teacher in a British high school, secondary schools as they're called over here in Britain. And my hobby is role playing. I think one of the questions you wanted to ask me is what was the purpose of it? So the school I'm currently in has a sort of almost mandatory. Every member of staff has to provide what's called an enrichment activity. Now, some of my colleagues, their enrichment activities are additional study periods, for example, with history or geography, go and spend an extra 50 minutes in a classroom building towards the exams. I expressly wanted to avoid doing anything like that, apart from the fact that I guess one of the purposes I have is to sort of develop some relationships with some of the students, outside of being their teacher in that strict sense. Right. I think it's really good and it enriches your relationships generally across the school, because word spreads. But also I just want a game. So, frankly, it was like, I'll do something I enjoy. So I set up the club. And I've done it in every school I've worked in. So, I got into teaching 12 years ago after a sort of 15 year or so business career. Went away and trained. So the first school I did a club, and there it was very much just an extra club. I think over the years under kind of current educational policy, we have this this language of enrichment that is sort of increasingly being used. You know, like what we're trying to do here is provide students with extra additional things that will enrich their experience of life generally, which I suppose is fine. I mean, it sounds a bit cheesy to me, but it's fine. And so, yeah, I'm providing like, it's about an hour or so after school. I'd love it to go longer, and I'm going to push the boundaries of that as I go forward, because that's what I do. You know, like if kids want to stay playing, fine by me, they'll get thrown out.
Right.
But yeah, so that's what I'm doing. And in previous groups, I usually get a session going for about an hour and a half to 2 hours, something like that, before the school will like insist that we all go home, because you know how it is.
To turn the lights off, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. And I guess one of the side effects of that, or effects of that, I suppose, because there are no side effects, just effects. The effect of that is that I've been forced to come up with ways of introducing, you know, young people, and I'm talking primarily 11 to about 14-year-olds, to tabletop role-playing games in a very short period of time. You know, I've developed various methods for that, but a lot of it comes down to using either really old D&D, because it's just quick, like BX or something, because it's just really quick to create a character and get playing, or stripping, like something you've been talking about, and like stripping down other games to their sort of core, and introducing those. And then alongside that, since I've had the podcast, I've been in the privileged position of having a few patrons, and the patrons provide me with a little bit of income. And so a lot of that income gets reinvested into school, buying copies of games that kids want. So they often have asked me for fifth edition D&D material, because it's very trendy and well known.
Right.
And so I'll provide them with a player's handbook, a, you know, DMG or monster manual, whatever they need. Recently I've been going through my role-playing collection and culling, essentially decluttering my collection, because, you know, 40 years of listening to the great corporate machine,
the siren song,
yeah, has to come to an end. Now actually also, because, you know, if you're aware, I don't know, episodes will have aired before this one, which is starting to sort of, I guess, you know, put this out in the public domain more. But if you listen to GM's Journal via Patreon, you'll have heard me talk a lot recently about like really wanting to sort of get to the root of things. And I think recently, you know, for me, I went right back to BRP roots, and I went back through, I'm really into GURPS third edition right now. But what it is tends to be is those generic games that I can shape in lots of different ways, for lots of different genres that I'm holding on to, and a lot of stuff that's just accumulated. Often I have it on PDF, so I really do not need the tome. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, the practical upshot of that is I've been taking a lot of those books that I haven't otherwise been able to sell, or I thought were particularly interesting for kids, took those into school. And what's fascinating is they just take them all away, you know, and do stuff with them. So
they use them,
which is remarkable, really. You know, it's kind of strange, isn't it? This idea of like having a book and maybe playing with it.
It gets harder.
Yeah, it's been really marvelous to watch, actually. And some of the stuff's gone away, and I haven't seen it back again. But the kids are like telling me, like, "Yeah, great, I'm happy to have that," and they just sort of slowly get into it. But some of it started showing up at the tables again. Weirdly, as I record this, I've just done another cull today, so there's a whole another stack of stuff that I can take. And it's weird because teenagers are not used to adults giving them things either, particularly. You know, like there's always no strings attached. They're really not used to that. They're used to like parents getting them things, but it's usually conditional.
On grades or
you know,
something.
Yeah. Or, you know, it's a present kind of for a birthday or Christmas or something. But even then, you know, adults tend to disapprove what young people want. So, me going, there's a table of stuff over there, please feel free to take it all away, is met with this nervousness, this kind of like, really?
Right.
Anyway, but anyway, like so that's the background.
Standing around the last piece of pie, right? Who gets to have the last piece of pie?
Yeah, cool. So what was it in terms of listening to what I've been talking about, what was it at first immediately struck you about what we have in common here?
I can't remember if it was something that you said or something that you wrote.
Mm.
But you mentioned that they took the games away and they started to play using them. And I felt like it was a D&D game, but it doesn't really matter.
Mm.
But they they just started to play. They had the rule books there, and if they had a question, they could look or they could make it up, and they did what they felt like in the moment. There's that that freedom.
Yeah.
Right. Which is, of course, exactly how many people played a million years ago when we were young. Right. Like when I was 13, we had Holmes and we had Moldvay and we had Mensur all in circulation. We all had access to different stuff, but we were only ever playing D&D and whatever rule book happened to be nearby, we used without even being aware on any level that they were not the same. Yeah. And only after years of, you know, when we had this question the last time, the answer was different. Or was it the answer different? Like, we pieced it together eventually, and then that really pushed us toward AD&D. But, you know, there was an abandon to it. There was a freedom to it.
Yeah.
That can disappear when we learn how to learn a new game.
Yeah.
And I happen to enjoy learning new games. And a lot of what I put on my YouTube channel is us learning games, like not us being skillful with games. It's us having no real idea. You know, we've gone through the effort of having our session zero, and we've made our cheat sheets, you know, if we think that they're necessary, and we have pregame discussions about, you know, any particular situation that we will or won't be doing. And then we have postgame discussions to talk about how it went. And that's what we show. Is the learning process, because I want to help people learn how to learn. But at the same time, it's nowhere near as fun to learn the game as it is to play the game.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Right?
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but I just recently got to the point where I am so fed up with learning games. You know, actually, I think I posted a few days ago, you know, just no more rules. And what it is I just want to play, and I've picked a couple of games that I'm really going to hold on to, you know, and obviously there will always be, when you go to one of them, a certain element of relearning, but what I'd like to do is master it to then get back to what you just been talking about, that I can just now play. And I also want to be the sort of GM who eventually is so confident and comfortable with the rules that I'm using that the players don't necessarily have to worry about that. You know, they can if they choose, but they don't have to worry about that. Because one of the things that's come out of the school club is the need to sort of get to the core of it for them really quickly, you know, so they can then just roll with it. And that's led to what you were commenting on a minute ago, where they've got a core. And then now able to sort of riff off of that. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
it's not an interruption. It's an interjection. You know, like, because that's so essential, that whole notion, right? Mm-hmm. I could roll a D20, or I could roll D percentile, or I could roll 3D6, or I could roll this die pool, and it can be a yes or no thing. Mm. Or... like one experience that I had with the writing class was the very first time I asked this particular group of kids who were the same kind of age, like 14, 15, over the span of 1 hour, two different groups playing independently of each other in the same room. There were kids who invented opposed roles, and who basically invented what gets called story gaming.
Right.
Right. So we had one group who was rolling for everything. And we had one group who was rolling for vast passages of time. And, you know, I want to go through the magical forest and recruit, you know, an army. Okay. Let's roll your charisma for that. And this represented months and months and months of time. So they were... They were working on a story level. The other group was working on a purely character level. I had modeled none of this. I had given them none of this. In the model session that I ran, I didn't include any violence whatsoever. I did investigation and I did information collection is what I showed. Lots of different ways to do that using the tools on the sheet. They created initiative. They created, you know, one group had static damage, the other group had random damage. This just came out of nowhere. So I just thought it was fascinating how they could do it and not care. Like, nobody asked me, is this right?
Yeah, it's interesting. Same with the kids at the school. So I'm going to talk about kids. This thing, yeah, these young students, they're playing, and what I've noticed is they are telling themselves they're playing fifth edition Dungeons and Dragons. At least until last session, the only really noticeable rule in use was the core D20 rule. Roll D20 high against a target number. But the way in which the GMs, so there's been two GMs and they've sort of swapped roles now. So the girl is currently running. She is just literally saying, okay, roll D20, you need a 15, or roll D20, you need a 12, you know, or roll D20, right, you need an 18. And it's all just based on like how difficult that feels. And whilst they do have kind of character sheets in front of them, I was amused to note that they still have the character sheets from the BX intro game I gave them before Christmas. Long before that, September, October time. They still got those sheets and those characters still in play. But there are none of the fifth edition bonuses or any of the mechanical elements that you would reckon. They're just using those sheets and the numbers they had there. And they hardly refer to them. They refer to them for equipment, maybe. Like they're noting down magic items and things like that they find, which, by the way, they make up. And even though they do have a player's handbook, a monster manual, a DMG, and several other pieces of resource, the most popular of which is the cards of the zero, was it challenge rating 0 to 5 monsters from the monster manual. They have those as a card deck, which I had knocking around, so I gave it to them. And what they're loving there is they're pulling out the picture. They've got some stats, you know, and the stats they're using are the armor class and the hit points. And that's, you know, basically kind of what's in use. And so what happened last session is I noticed that the guy who's been playing sorcerer for 4 months, actually said, hey, you know, I think I should write down some spells. And somebody said, oh yeah, you're supposed to have like 4 cantrips and a couple of like first level spells and a second level spell, like, because they're about third or fourth level. So he started looking in the player's handbook for the first time. Up to that point, they had just been like, when I do magic, I just roll dice, see if you guess. You know, it's completely been improvised. And yeah, it's fascinating to watch because there's a bit in my brain going, but you're not doing it wrong. And there's another bit in my brain going, no, you're absolutely doing the right thing. That's awesome, actually. And what they're doing is, I guess, more of what I would like to do, with my gaming, which is in the sense of loosening it up, you know, and sort of in being a bit more, I guess, less rigorous and a little bit more sort of, for want of a better word, open and creative, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a choice, right? I mean, I've never been a very good friend of math. So I have tend to shy away from games that expected me to do mathematical steps. So I have to add the dice together rather than count the number of successes. I'll choose the system that has me count successes any day over an additive system, just because of preference. And then if there's another step to that, like a multiplication because of some kind of force multiplier, now I'm feeling less comfortable about being right. Right, this is math, this is basic, this is simple. I should be able to do this in my head. I can do it in my head. I don't think I can do it in my head. And so I don't want to do it, is this feedback. I'm not inhabiting my character. I'm not enjoying the game. I'm not connected to my friends. I'm thinking about, I can't do this math step that's coming. And there's no fun in that. So what these kids that you're talking about and that I'm remembering are doing is they're skipping all of that, right? They're in the moment, whatever that moment is. I am very curious, what kind of moment is it? Like, are they in character as their characters in every moment, or are they more in an authorial, like they're playing their characters, but they're kind of from the outside, like a third person shooter kind of thing. They're looking and describing the character from the outside. Are they in that other world immersion that you've been talking about? You know, are they in the seat driving the character through the character's eyes, or are they driving the character but also watching them, or are they in a more of a god mode? Are they totally out and directing the story? Like, what are they doing?
From the outside, I mean, obviously you're going on what the evidence of what you're seeing here, but from the outside, right, it's a mix of things going on. So they are using first person language when talking about a character. I am doing, you know, I'm going to do this. So the primary group we're talking about here with this, the larger, slightly older kids, they're about 13, 14. The group is about 7 or 8. I think strong, about 7 kids strong, 1's GM and 6 players. Yeah. There's another group of younger students. They're much more in a sort of my character does much, you know, a bit more third person in style. And they are very much interested in basically they took away some traveler books and they got inspired by the pictures of the robots. And the last 2 sessions has been basically blowing up robots. You know, using, and again, they've not used 2d6 ever to adjudicate. So they're obviously not playing Traveller. What they are playing is whatever it is. They've got the d20 mechanism they learned from playing D&D with me.
Playing d20 Traveller, okay.
And sort of, yeah. But essentially, all it is a very occasional die roll. We'll see if something goes off. They are still using the numbers that are on those stat blocks, and the robot book has got like loads of pictures of robots, and then there's some stats there. They're using like the number of hits or whatever it can take. Using that, you know, but they're not much beyond that. They're not bothered. You know, it's just kind of like, oh, did you hit? Boom, boom. And they're just telling the story about blowing shit up, frankly, which is great fun.
Right.
And, you know,
that also proves that consistency is key, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean,
whatever it is they're doing it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing it their way. And I think what's slowly happening is that the kids are reading the books and then I've noticed there's this beginning to be this kind of like, oh, I was reading it and it's supposed to be done like this kind of conversation with beginning to happen. But actually, that's very secondary. Coming back to that main group, though, and what they're doing. So they're very much, I'm doing this first person. But I think what they're doing is they're imagining the scene collectively, and they're describing the scene. There's interesting things like the... I don't know whether they got it from me or not, because I do this, but the GM is doing things like, so when somebody gets into a fight, and the other day somebody killed an ogre or whatever. So then it was the GM said, yeah, just describe that then. Describe how you killed them, you know, and what happened. And they give a little bit of a description of what their character did. It's kind of like that movie moment of little montage kind of description. And then they moved on. The worlds that they're creating are incredibly eclectic, bizarre, and weird from my perspective. That obviously makes sense from theirs. And they're very lighthearted. I mean, it's obvious that the GM is largely improvising on the spot. Like they had a map and they decided that they were going to go to a nearby village. And somebody said, what's the name of the village? So they literally picked random words off the wall of the classroom, you know, to use the name of the village. So, you know, they've got the village of Buddha or something. Do you know what I mean? Kind of like whatever they needed.
Everybody knows that it was just made up on the spot.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter to them, because what's important is that the focus, to answer your question, seems to be on the interaction between the characters and the interaction between the players at the table. You know, what's really key is what I enjoyed most when I was young, which is the spending time with your buddies and mucking about. And actually, what our characters are about is sort of expressing a different alter ego, just mucking around with that together and having fun with that together. And what's really important to them is that it is a lot of fun, that it is enjoyable. So they're, you know, the main thrust of it and drive of it and purpose of play is to make each other laugh, to keep each other entertained, you know, and all of that. Yeah, yeah. And they get through an awful lot in 1 hour. You know, they have a number of what we would call scenes or encounters or whatever you want to call them. You know what I mean? Like a series of things going on. They're moving at a very much faster pace than many games that I've played in. You know, and because they loosened the mechanisms. The key mechanism is pass fail. And they've learned about yes and no and. So, you know, the extremes. The 20 roll, oh, that's a yes and. And a 1 is a no, and and I love that. I think that's enough, isn't it, for a lot of people? That 4 levels of 4 conditions of, you've got the extremely unlikely condition of extreme, you know, the extreme results, and you've got a core kind of yes, no. It's the oracle, isn't it? Like fundamental oracle of, did we succeed at the thing we did or not?
I think we're hardwired to recognize an extreme case. So,
yeah.
You know, so did they discover that in play, and did that evolve naturally, or is that something that they got from you?
I suspect that in the very first game, so we played the very first game, BX, had the makeup characters. It was roll your stats. We put some numbers on the sheet. It was, what have you got in your left hand? What have you got in your right hand? And you were all villagers you're chasing down some goblins who have basically kidnapped some children from the village or something like that. And they follow into a cave. And then we started the role playing from their decisions from there. And we played about a session. It was something like an hour. The following week, I was like, right, you can continue that if you want, or you can go and do your own thing. We'll go and do our own thing. Now, during that session, I suspect there would have been at least one extreme role. And I would have gone, ooh, that's interesting. Now, even though BX doesn't have a critical role, actually, I probably did react. I don't remember precisely, but I did react with, whoa, that's a big number. But even if I didn't, I think actually it seems quite natural to most people that when you get the very highest role or the very lowest role, that maybe that's special. Do you know what I mean? That somehow intuitively feels right.
Yeah, this is one of the fascinating things about the cultures of play. Like before the internet, when we could only communicate by snail mail, if you have only an inkling of what other people were doing at the table by like reading a Dragon magazine or something. These cultures of play grew up and were remarkably similar on some core functionality that is not in the core rules that we were using. You know, things like critical hits and critical failures and fumblers. Like I did not meet anybody who had played RuneQuest until well after university. You know, I discovered Call of Cthulhu when I was in university. That is the first time I can remember seeing that kind of rule in print.
Yeah.
But we were using it. Where did it come from? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that for me, I've realized that over the years that, I mean, I actually wrote, I mean, I haven't recorded this yet. So I think it's the episode before this one. Look out for it. It's called Permutations. But essentially what I've been reflecting on is the experience I went through in becoming a role player. Where we started was running around a field playing World War II make-believe games. And I distinctly remember a friend introducing us to Traveller, which is where I started. And we were quite young. It's around about 78, something like 77, 78. So when that got 77 is when that got released. We certainly had it by 78 when we were still in middle school, you know. But I remember that what that gave us was mechanisms to actually resolve things that previously caused the game to break down. Because the make-believe game of running around with our stick, which is my Lee Enfield rifle, by the way, running around outside, you know, it was obvious whether we could succeed or fail on physical tasks, because it was about we were physically, if I'm trying to climb this hill or climb a tree or whatever, you know, it's whether I could physically personally do that. And so that was that, you know, when you're playing as a kid, and that's the most natural thing to do, that there isn't a need to adjudicate that. But when we had rifles and we were imagining shooting people at a distance, and then you have the issue of like, bang, you're dead. No, I'm not. Games would then quickly devolve into argument. What Traveller gave us was the mechanism to go, well, I'll tell you what, roll dice. So looking back on it, I realized that we were LARPing before there was LARP, you know, like actually. But, you know, very quickly after discovering the role-playing game, we stopped running around outside, and actually all of our play came indoors and got modeled on a, you know, bits of paper or even on a sort of battle map type thing, I suppose. Like it was graph paper and us, you know, maybe moving tokens around, but I think at first much more like making an X mark and labeling it and drawing an arrow to where someone moved to, that kind of thing, if we needed to do that. And the rest of the time was descriptive. But my point in this is that actually what we took from Traveller was this 2d6 roll high b8 plus kind of core combat mechanism. It's actually what we tended to play with. And again, it became this, well, now we can answer almost any question. you know, with that simple mechanism. So did you in fact climb the tree? Oh, we can roll for that now. And it'd been introduced to the idea of characteristics to quantify our character. I mean, we could see how characters were better or worse at certain things, and you know, the skills that characters had added to bonuses. So that's kind of how we played, which weirdly enough is how Traveller has evolved into its modern Mongoose kind of version, if you like. And most later editions of that game just became that core mechanism and the adding bonuses kind of idea. We were doing that with Classic Traveller, which basically didn't tell you to do that. We were right. doing that quite kind of spontaneously. My point in bringing it up is, like, I realized looking back on it just how essentially tabletop role playing was an evolution of that natural childhood play, running around outside with our buddies playing, you know, whatever imaginary game we wanted to. And it gave me a mechanism for continuing to play make-believe games. And because it was a formally published game, it became to some degree permitted, or at least accepted by the adults around you. My parents never really understood them, but it was kind of like, well, it's a published game, so at least it's a real game. It's not like it's made up rubbish. So yeah, it's strange that we, as we get older, we feel like we need to justify our play, you know, and have permission to play.
Yeah, justify.
And kind of coming where I'm at now, I mean, I'm revisiting the whole sort of topic of play, and we are in a culture that is now rediscovering the, you know, health benefit of play. In fact, the fundamental need for human beings as adults to play. I'm reading Tabletop Role-Playing Therapy by Megan Connell at the moment, and that's about the use of role-playing games in therapeutic clinical environments, you know. And it's like, wow, you know, this hobby that was, for me, you know, mucking around with my friends and getting us in out of the cold is now like something that's genuinely being seen as a tool for therapy, you know, in a society where people are so sick from, in my view, not play, that we are, that actually now it's part of the toolbox for helping with healing. You know, it's kind of an amazing journey for the hobby, really. I don't know how I got there, but there we go.
Well, this is an addendum. When I reconciled with my parents over not being allowed to play during the Satanic Panic, conversation we had was, well, you know, why do you do it? And my father loved the original series of Star Trek, as do I, because love it to pieces. And there's an episode in the original series called Shore Leave. And one of the great lines in there is, the greater the mind, the greater the need for play. And he asked me, you know, so why do you want to play these things anyway? And that's what came out of my mouth. He laughed and laughed and laughed. But that started our kind of healing process. I mean, because I was pretty upset. I was pretty angry. You know, the best friends I've ever made in my life have been role-playing gamers. The friends that I still talk to today from when I was 13 are the people I role-played with, not that I did any other activity anywhere else in the world with. It's that group of people. So, you know, it was a pretty fundamental thing. So whether it can help resolve some kind of therapy or therapeutic question, or whether it's just a healthy alternate means of socializing rather than a sport or rather than a chess club or book club or something like that. I think that it's finally being accepted as.
Yeah. I know that in our emails before game, you asked me the question, does the club have an express purpose other than gaming, you know? And that's an interesting question, because on the surface of it, you know, I've always said I just want it to be a gaming club. So whilst I recognize there are, shall we say, educational values to role-playing games, I mean, you know, watching the kid who's a self-confessed, like, I cannot do math, sir, actually running a game. He's a young lad running the game for, based on the Traveller stuff, you know, he's telling me I can't really do math, I'm rubbish at math. And it's actually like, no, you're clearly not rubbish at math. You just haven't had an application that you're interested in, because that's actually what it is for me. And it's like, I'm watching them read as well. And again, many of these students sort of talk about, like, I'm not a reader, I don't like reading, and yet you're reading for a rule book. I mean, I had that experience as a kid as well, you know, like, again, it's what you're interested in. I always say to the students, you know, if you're not reading, well, you just need to find something you're interested in reading. It's not that you don't read, it's that you haven't found the books that are interesting yet. Which is fair enough. You know, absolutely. Yeah. But actually, those things underlie it. And if I have to sell it, to inverted commas, to management, then those are the kind of things that I will often say, well, you know, there are lots and lots of enriching benefits, shall we say.
Like in the school context, you have that issue.
Yeah, but fundamentally what it is I just want to share the hobby with them, you know. That being said, you know, I'm starting to notice that there are effects. Because we're always tempted to use this phrase. I mentioned it earlier, this idea of side effects. But actually what they are is the effects. There are no side effects. Right. They're just, side effects are often the effects we didn't expect or we didn't want. You know, when we talk about that, you know, like, you know, medical side effects. Well, actually, it's just the effect of the drug on you. And it's one of the ones you didn't want.
But it's just actually a pejorative.
Yeah, absolutely. It's us categorizing what's positive and negative effect, you know, if you like. But the effects of this are really interesting because I've always talked about the hobby being where I found acceptance and where I found a sense of kind of camaraderie and confidence. And I'm seeing that in students. So most of the students who come along to the group were at the beginning very withdrawn and very much kind of would have seen themselves as outsiders who didn't have a kind of much of a group or clique apart from each other. Actually that group of seven students have discovered each other. They've all in similar classes together, but I don't think they realized that they had so much in common, you know?
Yeah.
And what they had in common was this desire to muck about and play silly games, you know, tell stories, you know, that they never knew. But what's interesting is the depth of friendship that has emerged is really telling. You know, I mentioned to them, like I said to them the other day, like, do you play outside of this group then? And like, we don't at the moment. I said, you know, because I'm just asking, because when I was at school, you know, we used to play like every lunch hour and stuff like that. And they were like, that's a good idea. You know, that's a good idea. We could do that, couldn't we? And they were sort of noodling that idea around. So it's lovely to plant that thought for them. But I think they, you know, we live in a regimented society, actually, that often sort of people don't see that. Yes, you have this 1 hour after school thing that's going on, but there's nothing to stop you then, especially as I've given you all of the products, dice, and everything you need to do it anywhere, do that outside of that environment. But they hadn't, it sort of hadn't occurred to them, it seems. So kind of interesting. Yeah.
But there's a value there, yeah. Right? I mean, how do you assess the quality of the people in your life, if not by how and why they do the things that they do,
mm-hmm.
right? That person is a good man, that person is a good woman, or whatever, right? This person is a role model. I really admire them. Mm-hmm. And role-playing games give us a very condensed insight into what you would do or what you think is transgressive, or, right, you're going to do it because you're playing an evil character, not because it's you or... Mm-hmm. Whatever, you get a really clear insight into the quality of the person. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a little bit addictive, but it also gets rid of a lot of the social BS mm-hmm. that makes it hard to make connections in the quote, real world.
It's interesting you say that, because I think in a way, people... you turn up to play a character, you're playing an alter ego, a persona. You can play something that's actually quite different to you. But without realizing it, you're always going to be reflecting you. Because you're you. You can't not be you, right? You can pretend
to be. You've got some tell.
Yeah. And that what it is like exactly like you said. Like if I play a character that I'm saying is a bad guy, or I'm saying is a kind of an anti-hero, well, what traits I pick as anti-hero tell you everything about what I think is valuable and important, right?
Yes.
Just by definition, you know. And if I play a paladin, to use the old D&D sort of trope, and the way in which I play that tells you about what are my ideals are in terms of behavior and sort of moral value, if you like. And I think we struggle with theory of mind, you know, like we can't know someone else's mind except by what they tell us or what they show us. And I think a lot of our discomfort socially, you know, comes from, I don't know, a worry about whether we are getting it right. You know, am I able to actually figure out what people think of me and what people expect you know, and all of that. It's really interesting watching the group is that they just sort of naturally figure that out. And they're very communicative as well. Like if they're not happy with someone's behavior in that environment, then it's what Megan Connell calls the sort of magic circle that you're in the gaming.
Right.
There's a magic circle. And in that, really, it's safe. And you can kind of say what you think and you can be you. And I see that, you know, like a student gets outraged at something or someone else has said and kind of expresses it. And then they laugh about it. And there's an acceptance of, oh, yeah, you kind of stepped over a line there a little bit. And so the person corrects that, you know, or they defend it and they argue.
Or they defend it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's fine. But it's much, like I said, it's much simpler than the we are getting to know each other. You know, let's have a conversation.
Let's go for a drink. Let's go for a coffee.
Going for a drink or going for coffee is actually harder than sitting down to play a role-playing game. You know, it's kind of strange.
Much. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's, you start with the artificial, but it's supposed to be real. And then in the role-playing game, it's all imaginary. It's all artificial. But that experience, granted the right environment and the right players can be just as real as any real experience you've had.
Yeah. What I've realized now is that I kind of have to get out of their way. So I keep coming along and thinking, oh, I'll happily run a game for them because, you know, I set this up so I could play games. But I'm actually now just pretty much hanging around watching them do their thing. And it sort of occurred to me a few weeks ago now that actually that was the right thing to do because they kind of needed to not have me as the invader into their group. You know, like I'm not part of their friendship group. I am actually the adult, the teacher figure. You know, there's an element of I can be mentor and I can support. So they do come and ask, like the other day they're asking about the sleep spell for the first time they ever used it, you know. And weirdly, I can remember that it's 5d8 hit points of, you know, I don't know how I knew that, but I did without looking it up. And, you know, that's fine, I think, because this has become their group. It's their activity and the stories that they're telling. And I can watch it from the outside. And they don't mind that too much. And I can chip in a little bit here and there. But essentially, I have to let that go, which has left me in the situation of now realizing I'm really hankering for face-to-face gaming. and I'm not getting it there. So I've really got to seriously, strongly think about how am I going to get a new face-to-face group together? Because post-pandemic, you know, that's just not happened. So
you're going to have to get the teachers involved.
Yeah, that's one option, isn't it? I honestly can't see that happening, but just because
that's
they're all going to go, but we're too busy. Which brings me back to the core of what Roleplay Rescue is about. Anyway, how can we wrap this up? Because I'm conscious we've been wittering for well over an hour now. So,
okay,
what can we say?
Well, I think I'm really fascinated and thrilled to be able to talk with you about the experience you're having in that club, and I can't even really measure how thrilled I am that the club wasn't put into place by the administration, that it was something that you brought to the table, and it doesn't have some kind of governmental oversight goal, like we've got this many contact hours with our students outside, you know, all of that stuff, which drives me nuts. So it's great. And that they can just play and that they are just playing. Like when I was a high school kid, I would have killed if my history professor or my English professor would run the game for us. We talked about it all the time. How cool would it be? But then I would have missed out on all the cool games that we ran in the heartbreaking absence of this of this mentor figure. So I don't know, man.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, you know, what I'm going to do actually is kind of always hold out the, if you ever want me to run something, you let me know. I'll always hang that out there. But what I've noticed is they genuinely do seem to just be pretty self-sufficient and they don't care about doing it right, inverted commas. Right. Well, actually, that's not entirely true. There's a group of three guys who are basically of a wargaming background and a chess background as well, because we've just absorbed all of the gaming groups that have essentially started to die. And I introduced them to the Pathfinder 2nd edition starter set. I introduced the three players to that and started running it for them. And then we had a bit of a hiatus because the school was not open through strikes and other things going on the days when we were supposed to meet. So when we got back, when I was giving away all the stuff, I actually said, hey, do you want the part, you know, this starter set? And one of the lads is taking on the role of GM. Now, they were following things much more kind of linearly through the rules and like really taking a plodding pace through, you know, like using the map and the miniatures and everything else. And I think right. a lot of that's coming from their wargaming roots. They're also into Warhammer fantasy role playing, Warhammer 40K, and they like sure. playing chess. And I think they are much more mathematically minded students as well. It's kind of interesting. And of course, there's nothing wrong with that either. It's just that right. the other two groups are doing this very much more free form thing, which surprised the heck out of me.
Right. It's cool.
It's cool. Yeah, it's all but good. So
over time, it will be fascinating to hear how they shape their own tastes.
Mm.
Like what they identify, they self-identify as being the most satisfying elements and double down on whatever that might, like for me, it was horror gaming and for other friends, it was a lot more combat and you know, stuff like that. But yeah. it'd be interesting to see where they go.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's been a liberation. So again, this is one of the reasons I was really keen to talk to you is I've been going through a liberation of like the baggage of so many years of being told how to play and the varying theories about how to play, which I've spent many, many hours discussing in my podcast, you know, and all of that, by the way, has value. But what I'm coming to is it comes back to is actually, I want to sit down with my buddies and we choose a place. We've got some characters. We've got a sort of core mechanisms that are going to help us adjudicate like when we need to. And then it's this play, you know, they start the cycle of this is the situation. What do you want to do? I do this. Let's adjudicate the outcome. This is a new situation. What do you want to do? That cycle. That's actually where the richness is. And as I'm sure you're aware, for me, you know, I want to get into the fantasy. I want to imagine through the eyes of my character and all of that when I play. And as GM, I want to be able to facilitate all of that.
Which means, of course, sacrificing it for yourself.
Yeah, but also taking those things that can get in the way, like the math you talked about, for example. If you were at my table, right. I'd want to know that so I can say to you, "Well, roll a dice, but you don't have to do much else." Do you know what I mean? So you might be in a situation of rolling your 3d6 and seeing that they've kind of totaled low or totaled high. But I wouldn't want you to feel like you'd have to know every rule. Was going on. Do you know what I mean? I can just go, okay, cool, that's success or that's fail. This is what happens, you know, and keep it in that descriptive mode. I have, of course, the option of always saying, I'll do all the dice rolling for you. That's my flavor, you know. But it's interesting to watch the kids, you know, like actually they like rolling the die. They're not bothered about much else. You know, there's an element of rolling the die, oracle, yes, no. Yes and right. no and then from that it's play freeform.
Right.
Cool.
And that's cool. I think that is a good summation of what we hit on.
Mm.
And
well,
it's great fun to talk to you.
No, thank you for your time as well. So Runeslinger, Anthony, thanks very, very much for your time. we'll have to do it again sometime actually. But
I hope so.
I hope you've enjoyed it, and I certainly have. And I just thanks for the opportunity. I was really fascinated by this creative writing thing you're doing as well, or had done. So it's nice to sort of get the skinny on that as well.
Yeah, right on. It's great to find that these little pockets. It's not just one experience. It's not just one group of people that this happened for. It's happening all over. You know, you can invent all of role playing technique and theory in one afternoon with a bunch of noobs.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent stuff. All right, thanks so much. I guess we better stop and wish you all the best.
You too. Take care.
Big thank you once again to Runeslinger from Casting Shadows for coming and sharing his experiences. I'll stick the links to his blog, podcast, and YouTube channel in the show notes. Please do go and check out his stuff. If you have any questions or comments, I'd love to hear from you. Call in via speakpipe.com/roleplayrescue and feel free to leave a message. Thanks once again to all the Roleplay Rescue patrons who support the show through patreon.com/rpgrescue. Thank you also to John from Tale of the Manticore for all the Roleplay Rescue theme music. And most of all, thank you to you for showing up and listening. My name is Che Webster. This is Roleplay Rescue. I'll see you again next time. Game on.